night again come.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and you are very welcome to our service. To those watching on our webcam, to those listening to us during the week on the recordings page on our website, an extra special welcome is extended to you. You are very much part of our community. My name is Gavin Byrne, and I'm a member of this congregation. I'm also a ministry student with the Unitarian College. And I'd like to extend a Cead Míle Fáilte to Reverend Melda Grantham, who's there at the back beside the Reverend Mark Hutchinson. Now, Melda is a tutor with the college, the Unitarian College, and she is a proud Welsh Unitarian. Melda's job is to assess and to observe students who are progressing through the college. So be extra specially welcome to Melda. Our opening words. Today is our Pride service. We gather here, believers and non-believers, and everything in between. Come, come, whoever you are. Let us seek to connect to the sacred thread that connects us to each other and to all of creation. And let love always guide our thoughts and our actions. You are welcome here. Love is the doctrine of this church, and the search for truth is our sacrament. And this is a place where you are free to search for truth and meaning. We honor the wisdom of prophets, of teachers, of artists and poets, dreamers and rebels. We honor the words spoken to us in the past, and we honor those who speak to us today. And our hearts are open to those yet to speak and yet to act. Jesus taught us that each of us was created in the image of love. Wherever we come from, wherever we're going, whoever you are, whomever you love, we proclaim love on our side. Our bodies are sacred. Our minds are blessed, and our spirits are beloved. And may we be open to receive more love, always more love. And so we pray. In the midst of pride, may we take care of all our people. May we find strength to laugh. May we make space for freedom. And most importantly, may we all make the effort to notice the one who is excluded, left behind, or shut out. Amen. And now we shall light our chalice, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer, in celebration, in searching, and in love. We remember Seamus Homan, member of this congregation who died on Thursday. And we have been asked to remember Anke Foray, who died recently. And so we light our chalice with the words from Linda Lee Branson. We light this flame to ignite our hearts and minds, the spark of knowledge that enlightens, the shimmering hope that burns, the blazing love that engulfs our actions, the bonfire of commitment. We light this flame for those who celebrate themselves, who fear, who hope, who persevere, who stand on the side of love for all. We light this flame to celebrate our kaleidoscope of diversity, working, loving, and living on the side of love. For this, we light this flame. And now this sacred space, which is gifted to us, is now alive with friendship, with song, with poetry, and the wisdom of many souls. And let us sing now hymn number 66, When the Summer Sun is Shining. Our first reading this morning will be read by Robin.
Dr. Patrick Henry was a doctor mostly from Sligo and practiced most of his life in Sligo, and he was president of the Irish College of General Practitioners, and he wrote this book, The Healing Power of Humour, Some Observations on the Life of a Doctor in General Practice, and he gave me a present of it one time, and I'm just going to read one small chapter out of it, which is on marriage and courtship, Irish style. I have often been intrigued by the attitude of some Irish men to marriage, and especially the very practical approach that some men in rural Ireland adopt to choosing a wife. You know the story about the farmer who puts an advertisement in the matrimonial column of the newspaper seeking a partner, preferably the owner of a tractor, with a view to marriage. His priorities are stressed in the last line of the ad, please send a photograph of the tractor. Far be it from me to suggest that the above ever happened, but historically there was a lot to be said for the old matchmaking customs practiced in the Irish countryside. Those of us who had parents reared on the land would have heard many stories of very happy marriages resulting from careful matchmaking. Very often the medical practitioner would be asked for his opinion, as would the parish priest or the teacher. I was asked once to help a middle-aged farmer to find himself a wife. I plunged into the task with missionary zeal. When visiting farms, I had at least one eye out for a possible strong, intelligent woman of an age appropriate to the circumstances. I even wrote for assistance to the Marriage Knock Bureau. My efforts were all in vain. And then one day, the farmer arrived at my surgery, flushed with excitement. A painter doing a job for him had been consulted, and as a result of which the pair of them were all set to visit Cong the following Sunday to inspect a possible candidate. As far as I know, the man's subsequent marriage arose from such an arrangement, and I have no idea whether or not a later signing of a new Ford tractor in the yard was any way concerned with the happy event. Unquestioned, an 82-year-old man one time, on his reason for getting married at his time of life, his answer was quite simple and quite sincere. I wanted to receive all the sacraments I could get. One elderly bridegroom was, it was a chance I got. I would suspect that the motive of the bride, who was a great deal younger, would have been inspired more by the rolling acres of arable land that came with her spouse. A rather mischievous agricultural Casanova once asked me to keep my eyes open on his behalf for a widow woman, well on in years, with a fair side land and a bad cough. Who said that the age of true love and romance had died in Ireland? A couple of anecdotes, now not unconnected with male-female relationships, come to mind. One poor dear, signing the praise of a doctor whose clinic she was in practice of attending, said, the thing we like about him most is that he has no conception with any of us. What a noble fellow must have been. And the elderly man with a very severe arthritis, who confided in me that he only himself to blame because he lay in damp grass with a girl in 1934. Here surely is fertile material for research only on a painful condition which afflicted men whose fancies turned to thoughts of love in the damp spring of 1934. Some Irish men have their own ideas of what marriage is all about, as I have observed from various patients. One questioning one bachelor as to why he had never married, his answer was, it's more the pity. Doctor, I have no one to mind me now. It never occurred to him that minding in marriage is a two-way process. And there is one here that has got something to do with pride in those days. One patient confided in me his explanation for his happy marriage. We are both in love with the same woman.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Robin. And in time, we will write the story of same-sex marriage, Irish style. That will be something. Now, our story for our children and for all the young people here today is called The Day the Crayons Almost Quit. And it was a story I came across by Drew Daywalt. So at the end of a very busy day in school, Duncan got home and he found a bunch of letters beside his crayon box. The crayons were threatening strike action, and this is what was written. Hey Duncan, it's me, Red Crayon. We need to talk. You made me work harder than any of the other crayons. All year long, I wear myself out colouring fire engines, apples, strawberries, and everything else that's red. I even work during school holidays. I have to colour in all the Santas at Christmas and all the hearts on Valentine's Day. I need a rest. Your overworked friend, Red Crayon. Dear Duncan, all right, listen. I love that I'm your favourite crayon for grapes, for dragons, for wizard hats, but it makes me crazy that so much of my gorgeous colour goes outside the lines. If you don't start colouring inside the line soon, I'm gonna completely lose it. Your very neat friend, Purple Crayon. Dear Duncan, I'm tired of being called light brown or dark tan because I am neither. I'm beige and I am proud. I'm also tired of being second place to Little Miss Brown Crayon. It's not fair that Brown gets all the bears, the ponies and puppies, while the only things I get to colour are turkeys. Now, if I'm lucky, I just get to colour turkeys. When was the last time you got excited about colouring turkeys? Your beige friend, Beige Crayon. Dear Duncan, Grey Crayon here. You're killing me. I know you love elephants, and I know that elephants are grey, and that's a lot of space to colour in all by myself. And don't even get me started on the rhinos, the hippos, and the humpback whales. You know how tired I am after colouring one of those big animals. Please, try penguins. Penguins are grey, or maybe colour some small stones or pebbles. You need to give me a break. Your very tired friend, Grey Crayon. Duncan, you colour with me, but why? Most of the time I'm the same colour as the page you are using me on, white. If I didn't have a black outline, you wouldn't even know I was there. I'm not even in the rainbow. I'm only used to colour snow or to fill in empty spaces between other things, and it leaves me well feeling empty. We need to talk. Your empty friend, White Crayon. Dear Duncan, I hate being used to draw the outline of things that are coloured in by all the other colours, all of which think they're brighter than me. It's just not fair when you use me to draw a nice beach ball and then fill in the colours of the ball with all the other crayons. How about a black beach ball sometime? Is that too much to ask? Your friend, Black Crayon. Dear Duncan, as Green Crayon, I am writing for two reasons. One is to say that I like my workload of crocodiles and trees, dinosaurs and frogs. I've no problem and wish to congratulate you for a very successful colouring things green career so far. Now, the second reason I write is that for my friends, Yellow Crayon and Orange Crayon, they are no longer speaking to each other. Now, both crayons feel that they should be the colour of the sun. So please settle this soon because they're driving the rest of us crazy. Your happy friend, Green Crayon. Dear Duncan, Yellow Crayon here. I need to tell you to tell Orange Crayon that I am the color of the sun. I would tell her, but we're no longer speaking. And I can prove that I am the color of the sun. Last Tuesday, you used me to color in the sun on your Happy Farm coloring book, in case you've forgotten. It's on page 2, you can't miss me. I'm shining down brilliantly in a field of yellow corn, your pal, and the real color of the sun, yellow crayon. Dear Duncan, I see yellow crayon already wrote to you, the big whiner. Anyway, could you please tell Miss Telltale Tattler that she is not the color of the sun? I would, but we're no longer speaking. We both know that I am clearly the color of the sun, because on Thursday, you used me to color the sun in both the Monkey Island and the Meet the Zookeeper pages in your Day at the Zoo coloring book. Your pal, and the real color of the sun, Orange Crayon. We're nearly there. Dear Duncan, it's been great being your favorite color of this past year, and the year before, and the year before that. I've really enjoyed all those oceans and lakes, rivers, raindrops, rain clouds, and clear skies. The bad news is that I am so short and stubby, I can't even see over the railing in the crayon box anymore. I need a break. Your very stubby friend, Blue Crayon. Duncan. Okay, listen here, kid. You have not used me once in the past year. Is it because you think I'm a girly color? Speaking of which, please tell your little sister I said thank you for using me to color in a cute little princess coloring book. I think she did a fabulous job at staying inside the lines. Back to us. Could you please use me sometime to color in the occasional pink dinosaur or monster or cowboy? Goodness knows they could use a splash of color. Your unused friend, Pink Crayon. And to the last. Hey Duncan, it's me, Peachy Crayon. Why did you peel off my paper wrapping? Now I'm naked and too embarrassed to leave the crayon box. How would you like to go to school naked? I need some clothes. Please help. Your naked friend, Peach Crayon. So Duncan decided that every color in the world deserves to shine brightly in all his drawings. And he got to work on a big blank page and spent the rest of the day creating the most beautiful picture he ever created. And all the crayons shone brightly on the page and decided to withdraw their threat to strike. Amen. Now let us open our hymn books once more and let us sing hymn number 23. Bring many names. My reading this morning is entitled Circle Wisdom, and it leads into our silent meditation beautifully. I invite you to enter for a moment into sacred time and sacred space, into a way of seeing that is broad and spacious. See this day from the time you arose this morning until you sleep this evening as one ceremony, divided into small and familiar rituals, your heart as the altar, you, part of the cycles of light and darkness. Now, begin to see your life from the moment of your conception until the time of your death as one long, continuous ceremony filled with many rituals, some familiar, some unknown and challenging. Your home and all of your relations, the altar. And you, part of many seasons and cycles. Now see this ceremony of your life as part of a much larger ceremony that extends 7 generations into the past and 7 into the future. Made up of many births and deaths, this beautiful spinning earth, the altar, you, part of the great ebb and flow. And now, if you will, imagine this larger ceremony to be but one part of a ceremony so grand and so magnificent as to be hardly comprehensible. A great, vast ceremonial circle, rich and vibrant, with millions upon millions of swirling circles of dancing light, and you, one of those dancing circles, a dancer on the altar that is the universe, where time is eternal. At this time in our service, we pause and be quiet. Many of the best religious traditions suggest that prayer is simply being in silence, listening to our hearts, perhaps focusing on one question or thought. And today, I invite you to think on this. Where in your life do you feel connected? Can you find that sacred thread which connects us to each other, to the natural world, and to the sacred? And our quiet meditation will be brought to a close by a musical reflection from Josh. Thank you, Josh. Last year, I began my address by telling you about a social media post by a young person, and it was posted on the Instagram page of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Wilmington in the United States. And you might remember it read, "Dear Church with the Rainbow Flag, thank you for being brave enough to put a flag up. I'm not religious, but if there is a God, I am glad they have you. Sincerely, a thankful human." And this year I say again, I do hope God, Allah, Yahweh, the creator of beauty, love, and truth, is glad to have us, and we are glad to have each other in pride. In preparing for today's service, I came across a very short video of James Baldwin and Maya Angelou, and they were in conversation. You might have heard of both of them. They were both civil rights activists, and they were both writers. It was Maya who once said, "Try to be a rainbow in someone's cloud." Now, they shared a deep respect for each other's work, and they held very intimate conversations with each other, and they were televised on American public TV. And the programs were called Conversation with a Native Son. Now, one of those conversations really struck me, and this is how it went. "Where can human experience take you? All I know about human life is, if I love you, I love you. And if I love you and duck it, I die. I see the nature of love as the ability to dare, to challenge despair and dare to love. You cannot make a decision to fall in love with a person of one particular gender. You have to trust life." Now, this reminded me of a short poem by Iranian Sufi poet, the wonderful Hafiz. It's called "I Felt Love." "How did the rose ever open its heart and give to this world all its beauty? It felt the encouragement of light against its being. Otherwise, we all remain too frightened." Last year at our service, I said, "Embracing pride encourages gentleness and anger, but also strength and joy. Members of the pride community endure hatred, oppression, violence, and isolation, and it is pride that should be an act of resistance, a protest, a coming out. I am what I am, and what I am needs no excuses. Gay, straight, black, brown, white, cis, trans, non-binary, asexual, woman, man, believer, or unbeliever." I named this service Faithfully Queer. I do not like that word. It is used to hurt and insult. And I am sorry to myself, first and foremost, for using it. But pride is protest, and I will use the words to disarm anyone who tries to reduce and insult me. Perhaps we all need to be better at disarming anyone who seeks to take away your dignity and self-worth. But what do I mean by faithfully queer? Firstly, faithful to yourself. Be yourself. As a senior youth worker supporting and supervising a team of youth workers, that was often the very first piece of advice I would offer. What about faithful to your religious or non-religious convictions? Well, if you investigate the major world religions and also the key humanist or non-religious ethics or beliefs, you will find a number of key values that are common to all. These are compassion and generosity. They hold that all creatures, all of creation, should be treated with respect. All include texts that are considered sacred or foundational, and they all mark milestones from death to birth. Now, you may argue that we don't need a Christian, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, or any other religious teaching to direct our right actions. And this is true. Humanity has been around much longer than many of these faiths. But it is these faiths that have fashioned the world we know. It is these faiths that greatly influences the sky we live under, the earth we walk upon. All of these faiths teach peace, and they attempt to explain why is there something rather than nothing. Karen Armstrong, in her epic book, The Case for God, says that people have always sought to enhance and fulfill their humanity by engaging in religious rituals. Religion often provided shelter from tyranny and oppression. And this was certainly the case in the very early Christian community. So, being faithfully queer is to expect and hope that your faith community would love and protect you, and in turn offer that same love and protection to those who need it. You know that to be queer is not about who you have sex with. It is simply to fall out of society's deeply held belief of what is expected or normal. A church or faith system would collaborate with a state actor to place boundaries on what it means to be human being. And a theocratic model society, which described much of the world we grew up in, would have looked to natural law or other laws for guidance. And in that context, to be queer was to be non-conformist. When I found this spiritual movement, this church, this sacred space, this holy community, I began to develop a sense that I was done talking, done arguing, done debating. Because I had found a religious community that proudly declares that a person's gender and sexuality is to be respected and celebrated. And they're not just words. It witnesses to this by providing same-sex couples with a church under whose roof they can declare their love and get married. Further, it celebrates pride by marching in the parade and having today's pride service, which I think is now a firmly established tradition. For me then, was I done calling out those religious and secular leaders that sought to strip members of the LGBTIQ plus community of their dignity and right to proudly exist? So what about calling them in? And I'll expand on that idea in a second. Last year, I also spoke about what the Hebrew and Christian scriptures say about this, or better still, what they do not say. I also summarized the position of some of the other great world religions, and I outlined my conviction that all of us have a unique code, a unique set of biological traits that all have a spark of the divine. All are connected to the vital energy that gives life and sustenance to creation, as described in our second reading. And at this stage, I wish to point out, particularly for those who might be new to this community or who are here for the first time, this community, this church community, is not spiritually or religiously homogeneous. We don't all believe the same things. We do not require a confession of faith. We are diverse in our beliefs. But we are all committed to seeking the truth and listening to each other. Today I'm outlining my thoughts, my beliefs, and they are always subject to be challenged, and they're always subject to change. I said also last year that we are told that God made us in their own image. And if that is so, my gender and sexuality reflects God's image. God knit me together in my mother's womb, as the psalm says. Yes, I am who I am. No excuses needed. Male and female, God made them. Yes, of course. But within that spectrum of male and female, we find diversity and difference, not a strict binary. We know that because of our experience and the obvious diversity we encounter in the world. It is beautiful, and it calls for celebration. Now, I also spoke about the supposed condemnation of same-sex relationships in Scripture. Now, I'm not going to repeat what I said. Just to say very briefly, I expressed my belief and that of many biblical scholars that I trust that the Christian and Hebrew Scriptures do not suggest that a person's gender identity, gender expression, or sexuality affects their worthiness to be loved, accepted, respected, or treated with dignity. And I will add today that religious people, Christians in particular, of all shapes and sizes, should ask themselves, do you believe the interpretation that serves your identity politics? Or do you read it in light of your own and others' lived experience? And by the way, you are free to reject what you read, particularly that which insults your soul. This is a particularly Unitarian tradition. And for me to be a man of conviction and of faith, I must embrace all that is me and contribute to achieving a human community that is just, that is free, embracing of diversity, and be respectfully tolerant towards those who do not share all that I believe. And rather than call them out, which I probably did last year, and is often our default position, that approach often leads to conflict and, at worst, violence. So instead, I might call them in to have a conversation and also to listen. Words alone, a great speech or a talk or even debate, rarely changes hearts and minds. Because it is through human contact, when you come in contact with people who are different from you. Now, what brought about success in the same-sex marriage referendum 10 years ago was all those who had someone in their lives who were part of the Pride community. It seemed that success was achieved by calling in all those who might not have readily voted in support of this beautiful community and their right to marry the love of their lives. And you might remember 10 years ago, the campaign had a number of key things. There was personal storytelling by people seeking a yes vote. They were visible and they featured in all media. And the campaign focused not on laws and rights, but on love and family and fairness. It was emotionally resonant. The people were less worried about going against what they might have once believed was God's law. And we moved from the experience of authority to the authority of experience. And of course, the referendum had broad political support. Now, that's not always an indication of success, but it was this time. So back to calling in rather than calling out. Loretta Ross is an African-American activist. She's an academic, an author, and an absolute inspiration. And she says that in the span of her career and life, running my mouth never seemed to accomplish what I needed it to. And she is worried that we might be trapped in a calling out culture, in a cancel culture. Now, having said that, we don't wish to let another person's bigotry go unchallenged. Assume, she says, that they have within them goodness and empathy. Call on people, she says, to embrace their goodness and compassion, their empathy, and call on their ability to love. All you're admitting at that moment is that there is a possibility that they are as complicated as you are. Everybody deserves to be heard and respected. And my question then for Loretta was, is a call in, a call out, done with love? And I can't help but look for examples that demonstrate this. You might have some examples yourselves. I'm thinking of arguments or disagreements you might have had with a friend, with a brother or a sister, with your dad, with your neighbor, maybe the person sitting beside you now. A call in rather than a call out. Was this behind the Good Friday Agreement? Is this what the South African Truth and Reconciliation Commission was about? Was this what Jesus did throughout his dealings with people? And I'm thinking of Gandhi, who said that non-violence was mightier than the mightiest weapon of destruction devised by the ingenuity of man. We seek to end conflicts between people not with more violence, but by talking, engaging in a calling in to resolve the conflict. And rather than calling out someone or some group as racist or homophobic, I might say, I believe in the inherent dignity of all. I believe we can embrace difference. I believe we should listen to his or her life experiences and try to understand where they are at. I might say, I don't understand. Explain it to me. And I thought of turning the other cheek so I can hear all sides of the story or argument. Now, I accuse myself of naivety sometimes, and you might too, but it's worth a shot. So Loretta's advice really speaks to me. It enables me to be faithful to the Christian way or the humanist way, but essentially a human way of responding to those who attack you because you are different. Now, having said all of that, I am not done challenging those who seek to strip the Pride community of their dignity and right to be themselves. But perhaps I'll do less of the calling out and try a call in. Finally, I can't let this moment pass without reference to the continuing violence we are experiencing in our human community and how we must seek to be faithful to some basic human values of justice. And violence comes in both action and word. There is a deeply destructive loop of conflict and suffering currently at play. Now, perhaps there always has been, but we do not cease to change it. Sudan, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Myanmar, Burkina Faso, Ukraine, Palestine, Iran, Israel. Reverend Ian Kilroy is the abbot of the Dublin Zen Center, and he wrote in the Irish Times recently, "The Christian idea of bearing witness is vital and important now, but so too is an understanding of the Buddhist teaching of karma, which shows that actions conform to the principle of causality. Actions have consequences." And another key Buddhist teaching is that we should work to eliminate the root causes of suffering and conflict. The Islamic teaching in the Quran implores us to walk the earth humbly, and when the ignorant and foolish address you harshly or improperly, just say words of peace. And there are some examples of call-ins. The Buddha taught, hatred does not cease through hatred at any time. Hatred ceases through love. In conclusion, I offer you the words from Rumi, another Persian poet, and he wrote the words we sang before our service began. He was a 13th century deeply religious Muslim, and he gently invites us to avoid overloading the image of God with superfluous structures and complications. Another truly Unitarian idea. And in talking about what unites us as people of faith from different traditions, he declares, The lamps are different, but the light is the same. It comes from beyond. And he says, a lifetime without love is of no account. Love is the water of life. Drink it down with heart and soul. Amen. Now let us pick up our hymn books and turn to hymn number 163, For the Earth Forever Turning. Our notices. The funeral for the late Seamus Homan, who was a long-time member of this church, will take place on Tuesday, the 1st of July at 11 a.m. Thank you to all who have contributed to today's service. Ayla, thank you for preparing the church. Josh, thank you for the singing and for the accompanying of our singing. Robin, thank you for our reading. Thank you to our welcomers, Paula and Grania. Margaret, thank you, and Bridget, thank you for the flowers. And finally, Maeve, Alison, Therese, thank you for preparing downstairs for our refreshments after the service. And please do join us downstairs for tea and coffee. Now, Sundays at 2 is led by the Classical Musicians Network, and they meet here on the church on a regular basis. Their second hour-long concert is happening today at 2 p.m. And today's concert features highlights from the French flute repertoire, including Poulenc's Sonata and Messiaen's Le Mer Noir. And you are also invited to listen to the world premiere of two movements from a suite and piano works which is composed by Maya Elliott, who is a member of the group. Now, entry is free, but any donation you wish to make will go towards the Restoration Fund. For more information, you can speak to Shari, who's at the back there. Now, Pam leads our weekly service of reflection and meditation here in the church every Wednesday from 1.05 p.m. to 1.35 p.m. And after the service, there's a great chat with tea and coffee. You can also access those sessions via the webcam. In July, the book club is reading James by Percival Everett. And the book club's next meeting is on the last Wednesday, the 30th of July, at 7:30 in the vestry. And Alison, who's downstairs at the moment, you can ask her for any details. The Unitarian Walkers' next walk is on the 12th of July, and Frank Tracy will lead us on a walk around the Liberties, and you are invited to join them after the service. Now, following discussions with a number of people, there is a desire to re-establish our justice and peace group. Now, to that end, I am planning to talk more about this in a service in July, and I propose we might start a group that will meet during the week, in an evening during the week, to explore our greater Unitarian presence in this city and what we might do with that. So at that stage, we will talk about justice, peace, and witness, and our mission, and what is it that we are about in the city. So please keep tuned for more details. We met the Reverend Ant Howe from the Unitarian College 2 weeks ago at our service, and he asked us to bring to you details of the Lay Worship Leadership Foundation course, which starts in September. Now, we are blessed here to have an open pulpit where members of the congregation lead one service a month. That means we have diverse voices from the pulpit. And it's a treasured tradition in this Unitarian community. Now, this course that I'm talking about is for those who might be inspired to lead Unitarian services. It's also for those who already lead service, who wish to bring their unique voice to the pulpit. Maybe you need help with leading or want to improve the quality of your worship leadership, and you are invited to join this course if that is you. Now, it's conducted online via Zoom, and it's led by Unitarian ministers, experienced lay people, and there's a number of topics covered. There are 8 2-hour Zoom sessions. It begins at the end of September, and it will end at the beginning of December. Now, depending on the numbers, another course may begin after Christmas. So if this is something you're interested in pursuing, you can talk to me or to Bridget. Now, we'll put some more details on our weekly email newsletter, and perhaps in Uskald. There is more details on the college website, so we can post the link there and you can have a think about it. And finally today, thank you to everyone who marched behind the Unitarian Love banner yesterday. But thank you also to everyone in this community who support diversity, respect, and love. And with that in mind, let us open our hymn books for our final hymn, number 151, I Wish I Knew How. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams of a better, more just world, to make those dreams a reality. And if you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. God of the wind, God of the sun, God of our most precious world, bless us all in our diversity. Let us go now in peace, in love, and in pride. Amen.